When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, a titanic day for England in the second day of the Aegeus Bowl third test, and really piling on the pressure, England, with that mammoth score, 583 for 8 declared, and then getting three quick wickets, three Pakistani wickets in the evening. What an amazing day for, well, particularly for Zach Crawley. Extraordinary performance, 267. And, you know, with the 10th highest score by an England batsman, one of the highest scores ever by a 22-year-old. I think only one 22-year-old has made more runs for England. That was about 150 years ago. Or, you know, that's a joke, but it was a long time ago. And then this performance by Jimmy as well at the end of the day as well, really rubbing it all in. So, well, if you were a Pakistani, you'd be sort of really, really quite upset, I think, at the end of today.
Absolutely steamrolled Pakistan. I think the signs were there yesterday. England did a lot of damage to Pakistan yesterday on that first day. England 127 for 4. Then that partnership between Crawley and Butler just took the game away from Pakistan. And actually, they bowled really well first up this morning. There were some interruptions for bad weather, but they bowled really well and they restricted England. The new ball was still fairly new and they went past the outside edge, you know, many occasions. They didn't find the outside edge and then England just ground them down remorselessly. I suppose one question might be tonight, Yoz, why didn't England declare earlier? They seemed to be sort of pottering along a bit in that final session and they only had 10.5 overs at Pakistan. Who knows what would have happened if they'd had 20, 25 overs at them. But we might want to take listeners back to Adelaide 2006 when England declared on 551 for 6 against Australia and lost the match. Sometimes you can never be too careful.
Yeah, and it's good that you brought up that game. I mean, that was a bit of an outlier, really.
Yeah.
And I think the only person who believed that Australia could win that game in the entire ground on the fourth day was Shane Warne, or on the fifth morning, rather. And he won the match for Australia, really. It's funnily enough, when I was writing a book a few years ago about the great rivalry between England and Australia, and I had to pick 10 games to sort of highlight the great rivalry from, you know, 1882 onwards. And Shane Warne came up to me one day and he said, what game did you pick then? What are the games you picked to really kind of identify the great rivalry? And I said, I told him the list from 1882 onwards. And he said, what, you haven't included 2006-07 Adelaide? That's my finest hour. And that match you're referring to. And of course, he took those four wickets and totally mesmerised England on that last day and Australia won the match. But I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think that was in Joe Root's mind this time. Of course, he didn't play in that test, although he may have watched it on telly. And I think actually that there is this sort of compulsion to, yeah, as you say, not sort of take any risks and pile the pressure on. And also maybe there's this thing about if we have 10 overs with the new ball or 12 overs with the new ball tonight, it'll still be nice and hard and fresh and, you know, fairly sort of newish in the morning, whereas if you bowl 20 overs with it, there's a sort of bit of a myth feeling that it won't be as useful, as valuable. So maybe there's a little bit of that thinking as well, but I think it's flawed. You know, I think you definitely want your three seamers to have five or six overs each, I would have thought. And so that's 18 overs, isn't it? So, yeah, you know, that's the sort of an hour and 20 minutes is what I would have ideally had. But, you know, the one thing that against that, I suppose, is that you feel, you know, the openers, if they're only going to go and bat for 10 overs, they've got nothing to gain and a lot to lose. Whereas at least if you've given them 18 overs, they can start to get their innings going a bit.
Yeah, I'm actually with Joe Root on this. I think you should grind teams down. I think you should take those easy runs that are on offer in a situation like that. Teams actually on their knees as a bowling and a fielding side, and you just keep on going and just take those easy 40 runs that come your way and really make it tough. Because, of course, the other thing as well, if there's a bit of weather around on the last 3 days, England might need all the they might need to enforce the follow on. So you want to increase that target as well for Pakistan, and that's at 384. I remember, I can still sort of feel the emotion now and still see it, and I can know exactly where I was watching it when England walked off at 551 for six declared in Adelaide. I was shouting at my television, don't declare, keep going. The runs are coming.
I was actually there, yeah. I was at that game.
Well, what did it feel like when you were there? Did you think they should declare or not?
Well, I was quite surprised, I must say. And I remember I was lying sort of reclining on the bank at the Adelaide Oval in the sun, actually. I was working for radio, but that was a slot when I wasn't commentating. And suddenly they walked off. And I did think at the time, they got Ricky Ponting. And in fact, I was also on the boundary when Ashley Giles dropped Ponting on about 20 at deep square leg. And that was a bad moment as well, which cost England about 150 runs or something. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of revisiting the rather sad past. Now this England side look a lot more robust with the addition of Zach Crawley. I mean, I suppose one shouldn't suddenly judge a team by one big innings, but it was a hugely impressive performance. And what I particularly liked about it was the fact that he just kept going. I mean, to echo your point about being ruthless and piling up big scores, at various landmark points in his innings, 100, 150, 200, he just got his head down again. He didn't get one of those, maiden test runners where you get 100 and then you hit one boundary and then you sky one up in the air, so you're out for 104. There's a lot of people who've made runs like that, made hundreds like that, especially early on in their careers. But he just kept grinding out. And it wasn't a grind either. It was fluent, it was attractive, it was imposing, it was elegant. It was had a broad repertoire, back foot, front foot, both sides of the wicket, sometimes shimmying down the pitch and picking the bowlers up over deep wicket towards the end, a bit more expansion for perhaps his last 50 runs. But to outscore Jos Buttler as well as easily as he did, it says a huge amount for his ability and his application.
Yeah, he played superbly. I mean, the thing that really struck me about it was how crisply he hit the ball, how well he timed it off both front foot and back foot, and there was variation as well. He scored all around. There's reverse sweeping. I know you've got that license. When you've got a lot of runs behind, you've got that confidence. But it was a wonderful innings, and if he can take it on from here and really develop his career, what an excellent player England have got at the top of the order. They'd be desperately looking for sort of quality top order players. I'm one of those people that's always a bit cautious. You want to follow it up now, don't you, with a couple of other really sort of tough hundreds in difficult situations and really make it work for your team. I don't know, say in a test match in India or against India away, something like that, or an Ashes 100 in Australia, to really sort of stamp your mark on the game.
Yeah, but I think he's the sort of person who will do that. I mean, if you look at his sort of track record for the devotion he's put in, he's gone to Australia and worked with a leading coach called Noddy Holder there. He's been to India and done clinics at spin academies. He's done a lot of work on his fitness. Rob Key was telling me today, Rob Key was telling me today he spends a huge amount of time skipping. And that is an interesting point because we should bring in Andrew Sampson, who's been noticeable by his absence on TMS this summer. But the reason being, of course, that he can't travel from South Africa where he's based. But he's been keeping a keen eye on events in England, and he's got some interesting things to say about Zach Crawley and his feet.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things is, Zach Crawley's, I think, 6'5", according to Wikipedia. And generally, the great batsmen are quite short, if you think of your Bradmans and your Laras and your Tendulkars. So I've been looking at high scores by players who are tall, basically. So players 6'4" and taller, Kevin Peterson made 227 as his high score. But the highest by player that tall before today is Clive Lloyd. It was 242 not out, was his highest test score. So, you know, as he's certainly in the record books as a tall player making a big score. The tallest player that I can find who's made a triple century in test cricket is Inzamam Ul-Haq, who was 329, was his highest test score. And he was 6'3". So Crawley might be on course to be passing that as well. And the other interesting aspect of Crawley's career is that he started his career, I was following all these stats of him, making his highest score in each of his first five test innings, which is fairly rare. There's a few players who've done six. So he made a high score in each of his first five test innings. And then earlier this summer, he beat that again in his eighth test innings when he made 76. So this is the seventh time in his 12 innings in his test career where he's made his highest test score. I suspect he might be waiting a while before he makes his highest test score for the eighth time, though.
That's great.
So Andrew Sampson there, picking up on some interesting facts about Crawley, the fact that he keeps extending his highest test score, though he's going to struggle to extend his highest test score now and get even more in the next innings that he plays for England. But I think also that the fact that, you know, a tall player that we've sort of looked at there, the tall players in the game don't tend to be the ones that score the massive amounts of runs. In fact, I've looked at the top 50 test match run scorers in history, and only two of them are extremely tall, and that is Kevin Peterson and Clive Lloyd, both of them 6'4". And Clive Lloyd, who made a 242, he has the highest score by a 6'4" person. But now Crawley's gone one better than that. He's got the highest test score by a 6'4", although he's actually 6'5". So he's even a bit taller than Clive Lloyd. But why is it that tall players tend not to make the mountains of runs? I think it's because, this is in test cricket, of course, in one day cricket, the Chris Gayles of this world are, you know, almost out on their own. But it's a different matter playing test cricket, I think, because I think basically you have to be a bit more nimble. You can't just stride up the pitch and belt everything out of the park, which in one day cricket you can. And actually long levers, stability, you know, a big stable base and sort of audaciousness is the thing that makes a one-day player, whereas in test cricket you've got to be a bit more versatile, a bit more nimble. You've got to be able to play off the back foot. You might get targeted by short bowling, so you can't just stride up the pitch and hit everything on the up. The ball does something, the conditions change, you know, so you have to be more dexterous as a player. And I think in the past tall players have been a bit heavy-footed and therefore not as mobile at the crease. You know, a lot of the top batsmen, the great batsmen, the Pontings and the Tendulkars and Laras and people like that, they talk about dancing feet. And although this sounds like a generalisation, most really tall batsmen are not very dancey. They're not very sprightly at the crease.
Yeah, well, that sort of develops on the point we were making last night, wasn't it, about the number of tall players that have been successful at test level. And when we talk about tall, I mean, I've had a bit of interaction on social media today, and someone said, you know, with Joe Root 6 foot, I don't class that. I don't class that as tall. Tall to me is 6 foot, 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". That sort of height.
By the way, who is the tallest person who's made a double 100? And you were probably at this match not so long ago.
Oh, you put me right on the spot there. That's a good question. Let me think about it while I talk. One thing we should say, of course, as well, and you mentioned Zach Crawley. What's almost gone unnoticed? Well, not totally unnoticed, but you know, it's obviously he's obviously taken a back seat. Is Josh Butler making his highest first class score? And it was the way he went about it as well. The fact that he went about 3 hours without scoring a boundary. He batted for 311 balls. I mean, that is a lot for someone like Josh Butler. Although I think I sense the signs of a sort of different approach to his batting in that first innings in the first test match at Manchester, where he only made 38 and he batted superbly in that morning session. It really was top class, sort of tight defensive batting, really. It's not something you necessarily associate with Josh Butler, and I think he's developed that in this innings, and he looked really good, I thought. And I mean, actually bizarrely, both of them, after playing these magnificent innings, both got out to extremely tame dismissals. But that can happen, you know, your job is done.
Yeah, I'm so proud of Josh Butler, actually. I mean, he's the loveliest guy, and he's such a hard worker, and he's so inspiring. And you know, when you've got that amount of talent and you've got that amount of modesty as well, he's so sort of self-deprecating. You know, there must be times when he sort of looks inwardly at himself and goes, well, why am I not? I have got this talent, but why am I not really producing it at test level? Am I able to? Am I good enough? You know, have I really got the skills, the dedication, the mental application to make big runs at test level? Or am I always going to be someone who plays these fancy cameos and won test 100 a couple of years ago? And I think he came of age today. And you're right, there's been a good progression over the last couple of test matches, maybe three or four test matches, where he's just applied little tiny tinkerings to his method, just tweaked a few little things, which, you know, you need to have confidence in your ambition, don't you, to do that. You could just say, well, look, it's got me to this stage, how I do it, and why should I change? You know, I'm good enough. But he wants to be even better. And faith in the selectors has helped, obviously, you know, to give him that time, to give him that sort of self-awareness and, you know, a sort of sense of ambition that he is capable of more, and he's proved it. And that really is an immense innings by him. And he probably helped by having a very fluent partner at the other end, which allowed him to just play his natural way, or in a way, almost his unnatural way. He just batted without taking too many risks at all, and just got into his innings. That must have helped. But in fact, interestingly, Crawley said that having Butler at the other end was a massive help to him too, because he's such a calm, you know, encouraging person to have at the other end, and just the loveliest guy to have achieved that record stand with.
Yeah, they put on 359. Now, I think I've got an answer to your question. Well, I've got a response to your question. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's the answer to your question. How about Graham Smith?
Incorrect.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, you know, he has made a couple of double hundreds.
Yeah, and he's not that tall, actually.
No, he's not. He's not.
He's 6'2". I've looked up a lot of flights of players today, and he's 6'2". Jason Holder is 6 foot. I think 7. I think he's 6'7", and he made a double hundred against England, of course, a year or two ago, didn't he? And I mean, you know, in a way, he's a bit of an outlier as well, because he's not actually a frontline batsman. He's really more of a bowler. But he holds the excellent record of being the tallest person to have scored a double hundred. And I suggest that Zach Crawley is probably the second tallest, because England's tallest batsman was Tony Gregg, and he never made a double. So, you know, Zach Crawley's going to he's already established a number of records. Another one would be the first Englishman whose name begins with Z to make a Test 100 as well. The list goes on. It's a statistician's delight.
Yeah. Of course, Pakistan have got a double 100 maker beginning with Z, the great Zahir
Your
Vass.
Favourite man from Gloucestershire.
He was such a wonderful player
to
watch. Talking about Pakistan's batsmen, though, and their batting. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it happened to Joe Root yesterday. You know, that we had that big partnership between Crawley and Butler. Joe Root got an absolute pearler yesterday to dismiss him. And both Shan Masood and Abid Ali got excellent balls from Jimmy Anderson. Actually, Barbara Zam got a pretty good one as well just before the close. And so Jimmy Anderson, you know, we've started on Crawley and Butler. We talked a lot about Crawley and Butler, but Anderson's right in the frame again. You know, he's almost like stealing the headlines from them at the end of the day. Three wickets. He's up to 596 test match wickets. There are 17 available in this game. He needs four of them to go to 600. I wonder whether it's going to be tomorrow, whether it's going to be Monday, Tuesday, or whether it's going to be, I don't know, sometime next year. Who knows where, who knows when.
It's an amazing story. It slightly irritates me, actually, because I was going to sign a deal to actually make a documentary about Jimmy leading up to his 600th wicket, which I thought he might get in India in February or March, and so we got a couple of months to spend a bit of time with him. Not that he's agreed to this, by the way, but that was my idea. Now he's going to probably get it in this test, so it's too late. But what a remarkable cricketer. And, I felt for Pakistan a little bit because actually they, as you said at the start, they did bowl pretty well. And there's a bit in that pitch. And they, on another day, England could have been bowled out of 350 or so. But, the ball whistled past the edge and a few hedges didn't go to hand and so on. But to let Jimmy loose with 580 runs on the board, 10 overs to bowl, and brand new dark red Dukes in his hand, and a little bit of sort of slightly fading light and slightly nervous batsman. It's Rottweilers and nervous postman, isn't it? And yeah, he had three of them for breakfast.
Yeah, not easy. And I was thinking, actually, just as we were moving towards the close of play, you know, England got all these runs. We've seen Crawley and Butler get big hundreds. What about Babar Azam? Could he be the man for Pakistan? You're on the third day to really sort of stamp his authority on the test match. But no, it was umpire's call on impact. I don't mind that so much, actually. It's umpire's call on stumps, so you start to think, well, not quite so sure. But it was splattering into the top of middle and off, the umpire's call for impact. Fair enough, he was given out, and he looked stuffed as well. So an absolutely perfectly fair decision. Another one from umpire Goff, who's been, his decision-making has been excellent. So Pakistan, under pressure, I think it's fair to say. Well, I think that's an understatement, really. And England, as long as the weather holds or someone plays spectacularly well, you can see England going on to close out this match and win the series 2-0 and go above Australia in the World Test Championship. But, there's lots to develop before that comes to, its finality, and, we see who is going to compete in the final. But England, two fantastic days for them, and I just imagine Pakistan in their hotel bubble this evening. They've been here a long time, a very, very dispiriting couple of days. You do wonder about the damage done by that last day at Old Trafford, some of the self-belief that might well have been sucked out of Pakistan.
Yeah, well, we did say that at the time, actually, and it's certainly coming to bear now. What an amazing day for England. I think that's one of the best days cricket England have had. You know, complete cricket is what you'd call that. They hardly lost a wicket until a bit of a flurry towards the end. That mammoth stand, a record-breaking individual score, somebody getting their second test 100, a long-awaited 100 as well, and a very elegant one. And then the master of swing and seam getting three wickets at the end of the day. Pakistan reeling, still needing another 360 or even more than that to even save the follow-on. So it's a massive performance, a steamrolling performance by England. Poor old Pakistan, you can only feel a little bit of sympathy for them, but not that much. We want to see England win this game, and I think they will. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow night.
Podcast Network.